everyone, welcome to the Talking Split podcast. I'm Rob Calder. With me, I have Mike Zeppel and Justin Shaw, the high performance coaches for Metro and Country. Welcome, guys.
Robbie.
Thanks for joining us. You can get the podcast on iTunes and also the Basketball Victoria website. If you haven't already, please do leave a rating and a review of the podcast. It does help us to make sure that we're providing the content that you guys need that's helpful with your coaching. Always reach out to us via email and via social media as well. We really appreciate the interaction. We've had a couple of coaches email in over the last couple of weeks that we've been able to help out with or cause more confusion to. We're not really too sure. Sometimes it goes the other way. This is our last episode before Christmas. So this is episode 8. This was originally going to be a little 8-segment block of podcasts that we were going to knock out, and that was going to be it. As it turns out, we are returning next year as well. So we do appreciate all
season
the downloads.
Season 2,
yeah. This is sort of like Game of Thrones. You don't want to knock out 20 episodes with just a really short little 8 series. So with our last topic today, given we are approaching the time of year where players are going on breaks and coaches are going on breaks as well, we're going to look at the Christmas holiday list. So what do you want your players going away and working on over the break? How do you want to see them when they come back? Ideally, we'd all like to see everyone probably a foot and a half taller. You're 6 foot. Point guard now looks a little bit like Dirk or Durant or something like that, and they come back with the same skill set, but
Andy.
It would be very useful. But what are the big things, and bearing in mind that everyone's going to be coming back, I suppose, with different goals in mind. There are going to be some kids that come back early for the high performance stuff, so that would include East Coast, Southern Cross, ADCs, Country Cup. A lot of things coming back with that. There's also a lot of players that will be coming back simply for the Australia Day tournaments when they roll around again. With everything winding up, probably this week or maybe the next, what are some of the things that you're starting to put in place for your players for when they come back?
I might just start by saying, like, historically, basketball players are made in the summertime. Like, that's the consensus in the US, because the kids always get off between kind of May and August. Our kids are off here between, you know, start of December and the end of January, so you've got 2 months.
The end of December, it doesn't stop.
Okay. School. Basketball players are made in the summer. Like the message that I sent to our NITP kids and MPP kids, last week when our first block of work wound up, was you've got between December 15 and February 1. That's 45 days. You can't waste that time. You put in too much good work through the year to waste 45 days of work time. Take some days off. You've got Christmas, got New Year's. It's summertime, absolutely. But 45 days, you can get some serious development done.
And it doesn't have to be long blocks of work. I think what I've always looked for is which athletes really love it, and you determine that over the break. So, you know, the athlete that's going down the beach with mum and dad for a 3-week block and they're hitting you up to say, oh, what can I do? I won't have access to a court, but what can I do? Or do you know a gym down that way I can get into? That always kind of, you know, all right, well, they're in good shape. One thing I would say, though, is I do think everyone needs a mental refresher. And so one thing I make sure the athletes do through that Christmas period is they do give themselves at least one day where they don't touch a ball, watch basketball, anything like that. Because I do think you need that refresher. The biggest challenge this time of year is, I think, actually a parent challenge, where parents are saying, oh, you've been training hard all year, like, just stop everything. Stopping everything right now is the quickest way to have an injury when you come back.
Yeah.
So there needs to be some scaling back of load, absolutely, and use it as a chance to freshen up. But hopefully that's some of the stuff we can share today, where the athletes still get in a little bit of work, do get better over the break, but are also at avoiding risk of injury when they come back into their play.
Most definitely. And Durham McKinnis spoke about that from Core Advantage, I think, on episode 2, for anyone that's been listening all the way through. You can certainly go to the Core Advantage website, and they've got some game fit drills that will keep you conditioned, or your kids conditioned, over the holiday break. Because I think that's something he spoke about, is that when you're going at a really high load, you drop away really quickly, and then you try and spike on the way back up. That is going to cause problems. And a lot of the athletes we deal with around that sort of 15 age group and upwards, that's the quickest way to a stress fracture, and something that will set you back a long time. And that's really hard to come back from. So I think that is the conditioning side of things is really relevant. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you need to be going on 10K runs or anything like that. It just needs to be that you are keeping some level of conditioning up, and so that when you get back on court, you're not heaving early.
The one that I've used now for about 6 to 8 years is a water running program in the summer. It's non-impact, really good cardio workout. everyone's near water in summer in Australia, so it's usually like people want to go to the pool or they want to do it in the ocean or whatever, and I've just found it's a great way for athletes to only go to do it 3 times a week, so it's not a daily thing, maintains their conditioning, takes a load off the legs, but they're still in good nick when they come back. And we'll do a 3-minute run just as a simple test so that the athlete knows what benchmark they've got to come back in on, and ultimately that's just more as an accountability thing. It's not something they need to be doing every day, but they can test themselves out once before they come back. Am I still around the mark in those break periods, so they know that they're on
track? Do that on the floor, the 3-minute run?
On the floor. Basketball court. One end up is one, back is two. It's one of Brett Brown's old boomer drills. Yeah. And like if they can get to 30, they're doing really well. Yeah. But like they'll know their personal marker. So then they can also just gauge, well, am I losing too much fitness in the break, or am I still just maintaining where I'm at? But that's always been the biggest key for me.
Yeah, I love the idea of benchmarking. I think that's a really valuable thing to track over the summer, and I'll talk about it a little bit later in the podcast as well, but I think it's really valuable if you can give them an idea of what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, and what they can aim for as well. So there's nothing wrong with doing 5-minute threes and having a boomer or an opal as what the score is to try and beat as a 15-year-old.
Yeah. It's funny you say that as well. Like all my shooting programs in the summer break are makes, so a certain number of makes per day. So then there's that little bit of pressure on the athlete to get it done in their own certain time. But also, if they have a great day, well, I'm out of the gym in half done. Hour. Like, you know, it's not, I've done my work for today. It doesn't have to be, in my opinion, huge amounts of time. Now, if they love the game, they're going to be playing 1-on-1, 2-on-2, you know, They're going to be having a ball in their hand, but you know, the actual programming, make it really identified, detailed work. And to me, the only stuff I ask for is shooting, because I think shooting's like anything that's a master skill. If you're not doing it daily, you're losing that thing touch. Just maintaining that's been the priority.
Yeah, and I spoke to Robbie and I were out at Helping Hoops a couple of weeks ago, and they started their workout with form shooting, which was awesome to see. But something that we spoke about with the NITP crew this year as a coaching staff is the importance of shooting the ball. And you've got to shoot the ball to get better. But if you think about even form shooting and technique, and I tell the kids, if you made 100 shots on 40 of the days through summer, that's 4,000 makes. Is that the right math, Robin?
Wrong person to ask.
That's 4,000 makes. And that's just making 100 shots a day from 3 feet, which will take you 12 to 15 minutes a day. If it's a priority for you to become a better shooter, you'll find that 12 to 15 minutes in that day. And it adds up. 4,000 makes as a 13-year-old, as a 14-year-old, as a 15-year-old. By the time you finish high school, you're looking at 20, 25, 30,000 makes. And we're just talking about one drill for 15 minutes a day through the summer. So when you add up all those shots that Justin just spoke about, all the work you do over 12 months, you're talking in the 250,000 kind of makes if you're shooting the ball to become a better shooter.
It's a lot of numbers he's just thrown at that. And for those of you that don't know, Justin and I have looked at each other with really blank looks on our faces as he's gone through all of this.
I've heard him say the skill before.
Yeah, he's got it. Excellent. So we've spoken about shooting. Obviously, it is difficult to get into gyms because a lot of gyms do relack at their floors over the break as well. There are normally outdoor courts you can go and have a look at.
It doesn't matter.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter. You don't need the most perfect spot to work on your jump shot. Find a hoop, find a ball.
That's the biggest misconception.
Everyone needs their workout person. You don't need your workout person.
You just need yourself. You need a ball, you need a rim. And you go into some of the countries in Europe in the middle of winter and you'll see kids shooting in snow. It's the same in the States. Like, you know, for us it's hot, but it's a beautiful thing being out in the sun and getting some shots and getting a little sweat in. But you know, flip that. The other thing that I like to preach in that break is watch some games.
Yeah.
You know,
Boxing Day.
Boxing Day is a beautiful day of NBA. Yep. There's great opportunity for the whole that whole period to get some games in, look at your position, see what you're doing and go from there.
Yeah.
Yep. I think that's a great way to do it. So we've discussed a little bit about the player development and what they can be doing over the break. It is important for coaches to get a break as well. Like Justin mentioned, that you need to get some time away from the game. Yep. And we're all involved in basketball because we all love it. Yeah. No question. But you do need a little bit of a break. Thankfully, coaches don't need to worry about the physical break quite so much. It really is largely a mental break. So what are some of the things that you can do where you don't necessarily need to be coaching on court, but you can start to develop your own coaching, improve your own coaching, as well as getting a little bit of downtime?
I mean, the first one you can probably do is find a good book. that's a, you know, find a recommended book or a book that you've heard somebody tell you is a great tool for. It can be to do with basketball, can do with coaching, could be leadership, could be business, could be anything. But a good book that you can pick up and, you know, have coffee in the morning that can help you, you know, shape your philosophy.
What's the last good one you read?
Last good book I read, I'm reading at the moment, Bill Walsh, Score Takes Care of Itself. So, NFL Hall of Fame coach, really good book on leadership. Not so much football, he talks about football, but leadership, his leadership philosophy, which is awesome.
I actually think they're the best books to read this time of year. Like, you can kind of start reading, you know, specific to basketball, and that's, there's nothing wrong with that, but I tend to do the same thing. Like, just try and get something that is about culture, leadership, different sport, different, you know, someone that I've never spent time looking at before, but trying to get something from that angle, I think is great.
Different sport's great.
Different sports,
it really is. It's, people underestimate that I need to read basketball books because that's what I'm involved in. Some of the NFL coaches have got some amazing stuff out
there. Absolutely. Anything, like, anything team-related, you know, I think correlates really well.
And business too. Like, the way really powerful CEOs or business owners speak, whatever they speak about in the organisation holds true to your basketball team if you treat it like an organisation. And culturally, they all aim for the same things that we do as coaches and teachers.
I think the other thing is, what I like to do is watch different games, but from a different angle at that time. Like, usually in season, you're going from watching your own tape to watching, you know, like, it's just a kind of a rat race to stay ahead of what you're doing, where in this period, again, like, there's so many games on EuroLeague, NBA, college, like, you can watch so many different angles, but then think about, well, what do I like that they're doing? How would that relate back to my group? So, you know, using it as an enjoyment part, not necessarily as a getting the thing done so you can move on to the next.
A couple of years ago, I kind of looked at my coaching, like, a bit of self-reflection on, you know, what I was about as a coach and the things that I probably needed to upskill myself in. And I played and coached in a system in the US that was very much not anti-zone, but we just didn't play a lot of zone. And because of that 10 years, I was way behind on zone concepts, offensively and defensively. So I spent a summer, got a couple DVDs, watched the DVDs, a couple different clinics on zone, read some articles just to try and get my head around, you know, what the zone in back then, 2015, 2016, looked like, because I had a bit of a gap in my knowledge about it.
So how else do you go about finding those gaps and filling them? Is it as simple as like a checklist that you sit down and say, hey, these are some of the things I feel are really relevant in basketball, and where are my gaps?
Yeah.
Like, how do you go about
that? A bit of honesty with yourself. Like, yeah, you know, we know only so much, and there's always room for, you know, self-improvement.
Yeah.
And, you know, another good book is Mindset. Carol Dweck, Stanford professor, and she talks about the growth mindset. Having a look at, you know, what do I have to do to continually evolve and grow? Because if I'm staying still, then it's doing us no good as an organisation, or my kids, or my players, or my, you know, my employees. So have a look at yourself. And what do you want to know? Is it, you know, international basketball? Is it pick and roll basketball? On ball defence? You know, there's going to be something.
Yeah, the old, what am I doing well? What do I want to keep? What do I want to get rid of? You know, like, reviewing yourself in that little sense from a program point, great opportunity. The other stuff that I would highly recommend is reward yourself. Like, you love the game, get along to a live game. You know, often coaches don't get to do it. NBL and WNBL are in the thick of their seasons. But the product now in Australia is so great that actually getting along, enjoy a couple of Christmas drinks and whatnot, and use it as a relaxing environment. But really kind of, you know, reward yourself for what you're doing with it.
The other thing I tell a lot of our Metro network coaches as well is, and this is me speaking of things that I find valuable, but I give it as a suggestion to them, is I learn the most and I take the most in when I'm sitting on the sidelines watching another team practice that's not my team, because you can see how the coaches communicate, the drills that are used, how the players are in the drill, what they're trying to, points of emphasis is within the drill work. So if you do know a team that's practicing or doing a preseason in the Seabull or Big B, and you can get out and watch a session, get out with your pen and pad and see what you can take from that as well.
I think it's a great time of year to also, I mean, we sort of touched a little bit on the self-reflection side of things, but it's a great way to do track what you want to do for the next 12 months too. And that might be you're coaching a VJBL level team, a state team, an Oz team, whatever that may be. And it's like, well, am I still on track to get everything I want to get done? And that might be a long-term plan of, hey, in 10 years' time, I want to be in the NBL. Okay, well, if you work back from that 10 years' time, are you still on track? What do you need to have covered off before that point? it's a great time to start planning as well and getting all your notes in place for the next coming year.
It's a great point, Rob. Like, with this year with the state coaches, we asked them to talk about their philosophy and you know, I know for some of the people coming in, that was the first time they'd really sat down and thought about, well, what do I believe the game looks like and that. And you do need downtime for that to be able to really invest in it, so wholeheartedly agree. I'm also going to throw out a holistic approach, though. Like, we've all probably got families, friends, you know, better others that are giving up a lot of time for us because we're all into our basketball and whatnot. So pretty important to remember them in this patch as well and not make it just another full-on basketball period. But
there are people
definitely put some time back into that, because when you do want to really invest in it, you can only be great at it when you've got that support network around you. And I think it is important to give back sometimes with that as well.
You can kind of pick the guy that's just got back from holidays engaged, can't you? Like, he's coming with a whole new stance on life. And
Yeah, I get it.
So, I mean, that's a great way, I feel, to get a break but still keep a hand in, because we do lose touch as well when we take a break from coaching. I know I feel it. The first time I go back and coach after I've had a break, I can't talk for probably a day and a half afterwards, because you're not used to just the constant having to talk and instruct. Project. Like, it's a really valuable part of it. So coaches that do have commitments coming up, like East Coast, Southern Cross, Country Cup, ADCs, you do need to stay involved a little bit. And whilst it's important you get a break, it's also a great time to reach out to some of your players and say, hey, is there any chance you want to come in for an individual, or we can get some time in, just to keep yourself sharp as well? Because I find I'm normally a couple of steps behind when I've come back after a break. So the more time I spend on court, as much as it refreshes you, you also need to stay with a hand in, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it helps you build that rapport with the player. So if you are able to get a couple of your players in for a 45-minute workout, absolutely. That is the number one thing that builds rapport with your kids, is your investment into their skill set. And also probably gives you a chance to work on things that you can't do when you've got 10 people or 10 athletes there. So maybe you can set up a video camera and film the kids shooting, and they're able to now see themselves on film and those things that you're talking about.
Record yourself. I know, Justin, you've mentioned that on another podcast. Record yourself and listen to yourself give instructions to one or two athletes.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other one would be, if you get two athletes in there, play some one-on-one. Under some, you know, different circumstances, three dribble limit, no dribble limit, out of a closeout, out of a handoff, whatever it is, because that's probably something that's missing from practice during the year when you're trying to build team concepts as well. So just utilize the time. Building rapport with your athletes, what a great opportunity if you've got one or two athletes and a basket and a couple balls.
Yep. So is there anything you do prescribe for your athletes? So we'll go back a little bit now. Like, is there anything you give your athletes? Do you give them a workout as such and say, you need to complete this and go from there? Or do you say, hey, this is now on you? Like, how much do you prescribe?
Yeah, like my Siebel guys and my Big Country athletes get the same program. And that's here, that water conditioning program and a shooting program. They get it for different reasons. Like, Siebel is, you got to be in shape by the time you check back in. So this is to help you with that. For the Big Country athletes, it's because they've got a pretty important tournament, basically when they come straight back in. And again, if you've done nothing, then you're going to struggle. So you know, that's what we do. We prescribe it, but at the same time, it's adaptable, again, to whatever environment they're in at that moment in time. And something is better than nothing is the other thing that I kind of pass on to the athletes at this time of year, is that, you know, just getting down the park, it's an outdoor hoop and you're just getting up some form shots, as Zep's spoken about, that's great. Well, that's better than doing nothing. So just making sure that they're getting some touch on the ball, some conditioning in, that's going to help their slip back into January competition.
Can't go backwards. Like, if you committed to form shooting every day and 3 days a week of water running, you can't go backwards. Like, you'll come in February 1 or Australia Day tournament at least ready to go.
Yeah.
And we've got a form shooting program that we put in on the Metro side. The athletes all know it. If they want to be a better shooter in February, they'll go and get it done as many times as they can through the summer.
Yep. One thing I've done with my younger kids, my under-12s are about to get it over the break this year, is just a daily planner for them. Mm. So we'll put down every day, and they'll have a list of drills they can complete on every day. And that is fairly simple. Form shooting, solo turnouts, elbow jump shots, two ball dribbling, things like that they can accumulate points for. Yeah. So we make it a little bit of a competition for them over the summer.
That's great.
And we'll say, hey, whoever comes back with the most amount of points gets a prize of some sort, whatever the case may be.
Great idea.
Just to make them a little bit competitive as well, because I do still want a level of competition, but to keep them in touch. But also want the kids talking to each other over the break. I want them to check in and say, hey, Justin, how many points you got? You come back and say 10. Yeah, yeah. Well, I've only got 8. I need to go and do some work, so I can go and catch that up again.
We've all been there where you go from playing or training consecutively, you don't touch a ball for 2-3 weeks, then you pick a ball up and go to shoot it and hits the side of the backboard. Like, you want to get as far away from that as possible.
I don't think I've ever been there.
Come on, man. Yeah. You want to get far away from that. And to have little things like that in place, and it's, again, we come back to, it's 10 minutes, 12 minutes, 15 minutes, get in the driveway, do some ball wraps, do some 2-ball pound, and go to the beach. Go hang out with your mates, whatever it is, but it doesn't take long.
No.
It doesn't take long. And you're just trying to maintain touch over the summer as well.
Yep. Even basic things like skipping, some body work in terms of...
Skipping's huge, mate. I think it's one of the more underrated things.
Yep.
2 or 3 minutes of jumping rope is literally all it takes for you over, not once a week. Like, if you can commit to that over 3 or 4 years, a couple times a week, it makes such a difference. And it's easy.
It is.
It's really simple.
Even body resistance workouts like bands,
bridges, planks,
all those sorts of things. Really basic. Yeah, it's not hard. For some of us, it's hard, in all honesty, to do a simple push up. But for athletes, it shouldn't be too difficult for them either. So I think you can certainly prescribe things for your athletes to do. And I think it does need to be incorporating skill development work. And as you say, Mike, they're made over the summer period. But there also needs to be an element of physical conditioning that go to that, so they are in shape. There's no point having a great handle on the ball if you can go 2 trips and then you're gassed. So we do need them coming back fit, especially for those kids that are going into tournaments that have selections riding on them. So East Coast, Country Cup, there are selections pending for these kids, so they need to be in shape as well. But it's also a great time to sit there and say, well, okay, as a player, I'm not happy that I made the threes. Over summer, I'm going to make sure that I'm better than some of the kids in the twos. So it's not a bad time to do it. Any other suggestions for coaches out there?
No, try and enjoy the break and Merry Christmas.
Get some time off, clear your head and figure out how you're going to make 2018 like a powerful year for you. I think that's, players can do that, coaches can do that too. Like, what do you want to get out of 2018? And all successful people say that they set themselves some short-term, long-term, mid-term goals. What's 2018 look like for you as a player and as a coach as well?
Busy. Is usually the,
it's probably how it's gonna
the
go.
Answer.
It's going to be busy.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone. That is it from us for the year. We really do appreciate your support. Hopefully this podcast has been beneficial to your coaching. Again, please reach out over the break if you've got any questions. And we'll certainly be back next year with some
season
new
two.
Topics. Season two.
Season
this
two.
Is where the dragon comes in, I think, from memory. But enjoy the break. Have a safe and merry Christmas and holidays and everything like that. And we'll catch you guys next year. All right, for the second half of today's podcast, we are joined by Peter Lonigan, who is the head of high performance coach development, other than having the longest title in Basketball Australian history. Thank you very much for joining us, Lonnie. Give us a little bit of an overview of what your role encompasses with Basketball Australia.
Yeah, well, I've got the one title that you can't turn into an acronym, so you know it's long. But I'm involved in coach education, both in terms of grassroots coach education and development, right through to our high-performance coaches and their overall professional development. So it's a pretty all-encompassing role, but as I tell people all the time, it's far better than a real job.
Very true. Now, I should also point out, we have traded out Mike Zeppel for Lono in this one, and we do have Justin Shuler with us in the room as well. You can make up your own minds if it's an upgrade or a downgrade. We like to think it's an upgrade anyway. But as a little bit of your background, Lono, obviously head coach of Basketball Victoria Country in a previous life, and again, debatable on who did that better between the two people in the room. Head coach of the under-17 Australian women, assistant coach of the Australian Opals, okay, and they are currently in this role, but probably the biggest one, and I think it's probably where it kicked you off, is Griffith Basketball. Debatable a little bit, I suppose, on who the bigger name to come out of Griffith Basketball was between yourself and Mike McHugh, but given you're in the room and we haven't had Mike, we're sticking with you at the moment.
Yeah, well, we do like to talk about the Holy Trinity. There's McHugh, of course, the Lord Mayor of Griffith. Mike Kelly, who is, we like to claim, because he did spend 8 months playing for the Mighty Demons, and myself. So that's probably the order right there, 1, 2, and 3.
It's excellent. So given we've got you in the room at the moment, probably we try and make this as coach relevant as possible, obviously, so that people listening to this can get something from the podcast as well. So in your opinion, what are the most important things to being a good coach? And that can be any level of basketball. That could be the person that walks in at under-10s level and gets them for the first time, all the way up through to our Oz levels. What are the important things to you that you look for in good coaches?
I think the first one is a really strong empathy for players. You know, this, like any sport, is a player's game. You know, that we're there to support. So I think empathy is really, really important, and understanding of the challenges that athletes go, and a real desire to make it about them is really important. Linked to that is high-level communication. I was talking to someone this morning about coaching, and I said, look, everyone runs good stuff. You know, you go out to VJBL on a Friday night, people are running good stuff. They're running high-level technical things, and it doesn't matter.
Yep.
But, you know, your ability to impart that information, to inspire, to make change. So communication is the next one. And then probably third is technical knowledge. You know, you need to have a base that you're teaching the kids, particularly fundamentally and conceptually, the right things. But to me, empathy is the big one.
Yeah, what about you, Justin?
Yeah, I'd probably echo the same. Like, relationships with athletes is pretty vital, especially this day and age. Like, no one's going to really play for you hard if they don't believe in what you're selling. And then being great at what you do. So everyone's got their own little niche. Turn that into what your asset is as a coach. So whether that's, you know, you're a defensive-minded coach, you're a great player development coach, whatever that is, be great at that. Don't try and be good at everything. Just hone in on the great at what you do.
There's a great clip on, I think it was the World Basketball Coaches Association, had a clip with Greg Popovich, which talked about exactly that. You know, the technical... He literally stood up there and lectured for half an hour on here's how you build relationships and here's how you work with people. The X's and O's people have. Like, that's quite okay, but it's the next part of it is, well, how do you make a good team a great team? And trust and buy-in from your players is really the key to that, I think. If you don't have that, well, it doesn't matter what you run.
Tough to be successful if you don't have that.
Well, you know, have good players too. Yeah, I mean, there is a little bit to that in terms of skill development, but it's a really big area that coaches ask a lot about communication and how can we be better at it. And kids in this day and age as well, they learn differently. It's not the same as 10 years ago when you could just say, hey, run the left wing, come off a flex cut and you'll be fine. Kids need to see that and they need to experience it a little bit at training sessions as well before they can actually put it into a game context, which is hard to do. So when we talk about coaches improving their own ability to coach, what are some of the things they can do to improve themselves as coaches?
I think exposing yourself to a wide variety of basketball experiences. You know, I was really fortunate from a very young age to have really good mentors, starting back in Griffith and then, you know, moving through different parts of the country and just coach juniors, coach seniors, coach women, coach men, coach girls, coach boys, go to practices, you know, just ring up someone and say, hey, coach, can I come watch practice? And, you know, coaches love to talk. They love to show how much knowledge they've got. And I just think that don't lock into doing one thing. Okay, I'm a boys coach or I'm a girls coach. Obviously, later you're going to have to probably focus in, but just that wide variety of basketball experiences, you know, is a big one. And then the willingness to drive your own professional development. You know, you're going to have to invest in it. You can't expect Basketball Victoria or anyone to give it to you on a platter, and there's great things there, but you have to be willing to invest time and, unfortunately, some money as well if you're really serious about getting better.
Yep.
That's the best advice I ever got was put money into it and go get in front of people and watch as many people as you can. But the other thing for me is just trial and error reps, like self-evaluation, when things go well, when things don't, and just get as many reps as you can. It's the same as an athlete. You've got to be actually in the game to be able to learn from what you do well and what you don't.
And part of that as well is taking on feedback as a coach. I think it's incredibly important for every coach to have a bit of a mentor that they can tap into along the way, and just that might just be a check-in every 2 months or so and say, hey, can you come to a session? Can you watch me coach again? See how I went? And being able to take on that feedback as well, it can be a little bit daunting at times. As coaches, I think we're really used to saying, hey, this is how we do things, and giving the direction. Sometimes it can be a little bit difficult to take it as well. But that's a really key area for mine, I think. And there aren't too many coaches out there that will sit there and say, hey, sorry, I don't have time to help someone else out. Everyone's been helped out along the way, and I think it's a great coaching fraternity we have that we can actually chip in and help each other out. And there's nothing wrong with going and watching something completely off the wall that you might coach under 10 girls. Go and watch an under 18 boys practice and just see something completely different can actually help you with your coaching.
It's a huge point. I reckon Lotto can vouch for this. It's a world mentality that you can go anywhere in the world, touch base with a coach, and they're probably going to open up the session for you and let you sit in and take notes, and talking to coaches from other sports, that doesn't generally happen. Like, it is a unique part of basketball that coaches in our sport are really willing to share.
Well, it's interesting, you know, we're sitting here in the gaze room, and there's these fantastic images of Lindsay, and he and Ken Watson before him, they were fantastic at just going and asking, being curious, and then because they had that mentality, they were able to impact hundreds of Victorian and Australian coaches to do the same. So just become the ethos of what we do as coaches. You're right. In some of the other coaches, it doesn't happen. There's a very much protective or almost paranoia about it, where, you know, the ethos in coaching is share, you know, which is great.
What do you think that does happen in other sports? Like, what is it that makes basketball a little bit unique? Like, I've got no idea, in all. I've never really thought about it, but most other sports are pretty happy. If you ring up an AFL club or something like that, they're happy for a basketball coach to come in and just, hey, can I watch your session? Can I watch how you deliver something? But for some reason, they don't want to share within their own sport. I don't get it.
I think the smaller a sport, like Aussie Rules is only a national sport, so it's only played here, probably keeping cards close to the chest. I know in the NBA, from team to team, they're pretty reluctant to share as well. So I guess when the stakes get higher, it probably makes it a bit harder. But the willingness to help people is an Australian trait. So I think, you know, just as Aussies, that's something that comes naturally to people in the sport.
Yeah, definitely. And I know Mike Zeppel's out of here, as I said. He's not with us today. He's off on the US and Europe tour.
Spain.
So I think they've just left Spain today. And the access they've been granted to numerous sporting places throughout Spain, and just seeing how their coaches work has been fantastic as well. So hopefully he brings back a whole heap of information that we can disseminate out to everyone. But, it's vital importance, I think, that we actually communicate and talk to each other with this. So when we start looking at national pathways, and this is obviously an area you're fairly heavily involved with, I know, and yourself too, Justin, as well. Like, we've got national schools going on here at the moment. There's a lot of kids that'll be up for selection of various Australian level teams, some COE scholarship holders as well. You want to talk us through just the pathway of a young 14-year-old kid that could be anywhere in Australia. I mean, there's no pathway that's unique, I suppose. Everyone's on the same pathway within Australia. What are some of the things that players can be looking to progress through?
Well, our pathway is probably unique globally, in the sense that we've got the local competition, then into your junior representative, and then into your regional, then state, you know, a national programs, then national teams. So it is a little unique because we have that high level of community basketball, probably more so than any other nation in the world. So it is a little unique that way. But in terms of the pathway, it does start at association level. That you know, the school basketball is absolutely crucial, and this is a great event here. But our, I guess, basketball ethos is from the community and local association level, and then into representing that association, and then maybe representing your town or your region, and it just grows from that. It's a layer mentality. And the pathway is difficult at times, isn't it? Because sometimes people think pathway is an elevator.
Yep.
You know, I get in on floor one. If I push the right buttons, I'll be at floor 12. Well, the reality is sometimes you're going to have to get out, walk down the stairs, go to a new building, get in a new elevator, and go from there. And so it's hard to provide clarity. It sounds like a terrible answer, but it's same with coaches. You know, sometimes you'll advance quickly through the different stages, and then you might hit a spot where you've got to go and do something different or look in a different avenue. So it's an interesting one, isn't it?
Yep, it is. It's tough. I mean, I suppose, Justin, you can speak to this a fair bit, given the countryside of things as well. Your pathway is fairly well mapped out for an athlete that might start at Jamboree level, and a coach that can start at Jamboree level as well. You just want to sort of take us through how that works.
I guess we try and have depth charts for both coaches and athletes so that we can track. But as Lono said, there's no clear straight line path on that. It's quite windy, and I guess how you do, and I had this chat with a coach the other day, like, how do I get to a full pay coaching job? Well, in our nation there's not a lot of those, but I said it starts with junior basketball, like actually getting yourself those reps, putting in the time at your association level, doing the work with those athletes, and then as things progress for that team, chances are things progress for you and doors open with maybe it's a high performance path or not. With Vic Country, we're purely a volunteer-based model. So we've got hundreds of coaches all around the country working with our under-12s, under-14s in our development phase. And then from there, we also have an open-door policy with high performance. So a number of those coaches just want to come and observe. We have a philosophy, we'll throw you in the deep end, you know, because I think that's the quickest way to evolve. But then it's about trying to get exposure for them at a national championship and then into national Australian development camps or national team camps, again, just so that they can put time into their own professional development. No clear path, but definitely some opportunities that definitely lie within that pathway.
And there's a lot of feedback given to coaches along the way as well. It's not just, hey, jump on court and then we're done with you and we'll catch you in 2 years. Like, you provide a lot of feedback to coaches as
well. Yeah, I think you hit it on the head early. Like, the people that... So, high-performance coaches are like high-performance athletes, in my opinion. Like, you can work as hard as you want and sometimes you're never going to become a pro athlete, and that's the same for high-performance coaching. But the thing that separates people, I think, are the people that are willing to seek feedback and then take that feedback on and implement change from it. So there's one thing in asking for feedback and then going, no, actually, I think I'm right and I'm going to go with it. Like, find those people around. You know, Lono spoke about mentors. I've been really fortunate to have great mentors along the way as well. They're the people that, when they speak, you've got to be able to listen and then try and make change on what it is. And often it's not a huge change of what you're doing. Like, everyone coaches for the right reasons, I think. It's just about constantly evolving with your craft and taking steps up that food chain to try and challenge yourself.
Yep.
I think with feedback, it's an interesting one. And my second favourite podcast after this one is the Woj Pod. So yep. You guys are in lofty, lofty status there. But Tim Connolly had a great... He's the GM of Denver Nuggets. And he said with feedback... He said, I'm just being curious, I'm not being critical. So when he provides feedback to his coaches or the people in his organisation, that's his ethos. Hey, I'm just being curious, I want to know more why you did that or why you're thinking that. And I thought that's a really great way to put it. So I use it with coaches all the time. Yep. Often it's just that use of questioning just to make you think rather than, and I think if, especially as a coach in the pathway, as a young coach, being open to that is absolutely crucial if you do want to progress to high performance coaching.
And I think a lot of that also ties into not being in a real hurry to get to where you're going. We look at some of the best coaches in the world, and they tend to be Brad Stevens is a fair exception, obviously, given he's still fairly young, but some of the best coaches in the world are 50, 60 years old and older. There's a lot of time put into that craft. Yeah. You're not going to get 50 years worth of knowledge into 3 years quickly.
I may have spoken about this before, but I feel very fortunate now to be head coach of an under-17 team, but probably when I thought I was ready to do that, there was no way I was looking back at it. Like, going through a couple campaigns, I feel way more confident now than if you're only thrown in that deep end at that point. And there is something about wanting to be hungry and move up the chain. Like, I think you've got to have that. But also, if you do get a setback, don't be shattered on that. Like, now keep working, and probably the timeline that you are being assisted on is actually the correct timeline.
Well, it's interesting. In the US, they've just replaced a relatively successful coach in Mike Krzyzewski, because he's mid-60s, with a 67-year-old guy.
Yep.
And Greg Popovich, a fair coach, he's going to coach his first national team. So, obviously they're extreme examples, but just that patience and that it's not a linear pathway. I think that's a big one. There's going to be times of frustration. There's going to be times where you don't feel you are moving forward, but you just never know when the next opportunity is going to come about.
I suppose that goes full circle. It comes back with, if you invest in the players, they'll eventually reward you for that, and it will be recognised by people. If you can consistently produce a stable of athletes, it's like, geez, why are the kids coming out of this town so good? And people will look back and they'll say, hey, that's because that coach put the time in. And if you make a player first, well, they'll reward you for it. I think it's a great way to go about your coaching. And especially now we have so many opportunities for coaches to go and represent at various levels. So that could be metro or country, anywhere in Australia, effectively. You can coach at your association, but then you have events like Jamboree for the countryside, I think, Southern Cross that comes up, Country Cup that comes up, East Coast Challenge, NITP, Australian Development Camps, Australian Junior Team. Like, there are so many opportunities for coaches to go and apply their craft. And that might be as simple as you knock on the door one day and say, hey, I'm just really interested in what goes on here. Can I come and watch?
And that comes back to those trial and error reps you're kind of talking about. Yep. Like, those tournaments are great to test some things out, you know, and learn from it. Like, no one in this room right now can say they've always coached a perfect game. Like, it just doesn't happen. But I'm sure we can all think of a game where we definitely learned from that game and probably haven't made that same error again. So that's the important part, is putting yourself in those situations where you do get to, one, coach better athletes, because I think coaching better athletes really makes you a better coach, because they're going to hold you to account. But then, two, testing yourself out against better competition and learning from that. It's pretty important.
Yeah, I think that's something I've certainly learned over the last couple of years coaching under 16s and under 18s. It's really easy to dictate it under 12 level kids and say, hey, this is just what we do. And they go, yeah, okay, no worries. And off they go. Don't always get it right, but you know, by and large, they'll do what they're told. Under 16s and 18s will give you a little bit back. Hey, why do I have to do that? And I think it comes back to your point, Lono. They're just curious. They're not testing you on that. And it's not something that, hey, you're wrong. It is literally just because they want to have the answer, they need to understand it better. And I think if we can be better communicators as coaches, we can convey it to our athletes better, we'll get rewarded for that.
Yeah, I was watching a game here yesterday at the schools event, and Kevin Gorgian was coaching Box Hill, and Rex Nottage was coaching Newington. You know, between those guys, you know, got probably 1,000 wins each at different levels, of all levels of the sport, from NBL, you know, right through Siebel to schools and whatever else. And obviously, it was fun to watch them teach and prod and try and have impact and whatever, but they were going through the same frustrations when players weren't doing as they were asked, and their guys probably in their 30-plus years of coaching at a good level. So, you know, it's always a challenge, and it doesn't matter if you're 3 years in or 33 years in.
Yeah. And that's part of the battle. We talk about a pyramid-type situation a lot, and there's a lot of people at the bottom end. As you move up, obviously, it's a pointy end. That pointy end is becoming wider in terms of coaching ability. It's not a case of, hey, you can just walk in and get a job whenever you feel like it. You've got to put some hours and some time into that and make sure that you're ready. And whilst you may get a setback along the way and, hey, why have I missed out on that job? That's cool. Like, the solution isn't to just pout and walk away from it and go, well, this is all, I'm out.
It's a great point, though. Like, often with state coaching, coaches ask, you know, how do I become a state coach? And one of my points of feedback is you've got to be coaching daily. Doesn't mean you've got to be, you know, doing 10 hours daily, but there's got to be some sort of touch point daily to keep improving. And often coaches are, well, I like having, you know, Tuesdays and Thursdays off. Well, maybe, you know, trying to coach at the highest level isn't for you. Like, if it's something that you want to be great at, that takes time. On the flip side, though, there's also coaches that can burn out trying to do too much. So finding that balance is pretty unique. But, you know, being able to actually put the time into your craft is pretty important.
And being able to network with other coaches is a big part of that as well. It's really easy to get ahead of yourself and burn bridges along the way and just, hey, I don't need you now, I've moved on to that next level. And it's really important that, well, you might not need them now, but you might need them in 2 or 3 years' time when something happens. It's really important to be able to network with other coaches and just stay in contact.
Lono's Christmas card list this year is pretty big, I reckon.
Received or sent?
Received, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, relationships, that's why we get involved in sport. You know, as a kid, as a player, you play with your mates. It's why you would get involved in coaching. You want to help and you want to be part of something bigger than yourself, whether that's the Griffith Demons or Diamond Valley. It doesn't matter. You know, that's what you do. So that passion and that enjoyment should never leave. So the great thing about this, you walk 10 metres and you run into Kev Gorgian. You walk 10 metres, you run into Rex Nottage, Dave Buer. You know, there's all these guys that have come in and out of your basketball journey over the last... Well, for me, I'm a lot older than you guys, 25, 30 years. It's really cool.
Yeah.
You know, you might not have had a touch point with them for 5 or 6 years, but it doesn't take long to go, oh, I remember we did this, or, gee, I learned that from that guy. And, you know, I've enjoyed just the last 24 hours of doing that.
Yep. That's just Victoria for you, in all honesty, Lono. It's just a great state in general.
Well, you know, I've got the dual passport because I was born in Swan Hill. So I can play that card whenever it suits.
That's quite okay too. But, I mean, you make a great point. We had the Pete's Bar function here not too long ago. That was only a couple of weeks back. But just seeing how that event in itself has grown, and that's players, coaches, administrators, referees, that is a massive event that happens once a year, and it's fantastic that they're able to give back to an athlete financially as well as a part of that. But basketball in itself does link in a lot of great people with each other. And I must admit, there are certainly some people I like more than others. Maybe some sitting in this room, but, you know, I digress a little bit, Justin, it's okay. But it is, we have to remember that we are all in the game for the athletes and because we love the game. And we are lucky, and you make a great point, Lionel. We're sitting in the gauge room. How far ahead is basketball in this country, effectively, because of the work that was put in by these guys? You know, Lindsay, Andrew, Ken Watson, all these sorts of people. It's, and a national championship does tend to bring out everyone. You're able to sit there and say, hey, I remember that guy. They coached WA Country 3 or 4 years ago. I really like what they did, and you can go and have a chat with them. It's a great thing to be a part of, and I think any Australian Junior Championships, if you're lucky to have one that you have access to, just go and follow a team around for a week, sit behind the bench, have a closer look at what's going on. I think it's a great way to progress your own coaching, but get a little bit of an understanding of what just an Australian Junior Champs is like, because I certainly had no idea when I first walked into it. I thought, oh, it's just another tournament. It's like coaching pre-season tournament. Then all of a sudden you roll in and it's like, okay, 3 minutes in, this is definitely not a pre-season tournament. This is something
pretty big. Yeah, appreciate how good the athletes are and how good the coaching is. Like, you know, the amount of shots getting made this week at this tournament, like, it's a high level of hoop, you know, so enjoy that.
Absolutely. So we start to talk about national style of play, and this is something that comes down from Boomers and Opals and filters all the way through, I mean, at Oz Junior levels, which will then flow into AJCs and association level, effectively, from there. Can you talk us through the importance of a national style of play just within Australia?
Well, as a nation, we've always punched well and truly above our weight, you know, Olympic results, World Championships results, players in the NBA, WNBA. So for a nation of 24 million people, you know, we've punched above our weight. For us to continue to do that, we need to make sure that we've got efficiency of resources right across the board, and that includes how we teach, how we coach, how we develop players. It's not designed to be a cookie cutter. We don't want to come to major events and see every team running the same thing. But I guess in a training verbiage, you'd say core competencies. What does an elite Australian player look like? What can they do fundamentally? What concepts are they aware of? And when they play together, what's the collective look like? And it's that great thing, if there's a team out there and they're wearing plain white singlets, you should know they're an Australian team by the way they go about, the way they hold themselves, the way they present as athletes. So that's the philosophical side of it. Now, the specifics, you know, I'll let Justin, who's done a great job of integrating that into both his under-17 national team but also his Vic Country, talk more about some specifics.
Yeah, I guess for, like, when we talk style of play, it's not an actual system. It's more about how we play, as Lawrence touched on. So, you know, like, our pace, poise, penetration is a philosophy from our offensive side of the ball.
Do you want to just elaborate on pace, poise, penetration?
Yeah, it's purely tied in with the shot clock. So first eight, middle eight, last eight, what we're trying to achieve in those times. So every athlete, especially on the men's side of the program, know what we're trying to achieve when. Flip that to the defensive side. There's things in those segments we're looking for as well. We've spoken previously about receiver spots. Like, it doesn't matter what national team or what state team is around, athletes need to understand what those parts of the floor are. Like, you know, that thing matters. The types of shots we're looking for. So it's more those concepts versus an actual system. You know, on the men's side of the program, there is a heavy influence from what the Boomers do, and the flow system of play has been something that we're definitely implementing with the 17s and have with Vic Country, but that's not to say that that's got to be the be-all and end-all, but the actual style of play, how we want to play, playing quick, looking at layups and threes in the first eight, those sorts of things is kind of what we mean by that.
Yep, so, and that is of vital importance in your situation, given you have fairly limited prep with your Oz team, obviously.
Yep.
It's really helpful when all your players come in with some base core competencies you spoke about, Lono, that you need to know that they know where the receiver spots are on the floor when a certain action occurs. They are multi-skilled players. They are able to play multiple positions.
Like, when you've got a three-day camp and you're not having to teach concepts and style, now you're actually being able to layer things on top that are unique for that national team group. So massive advantage, and it's been something that in the last two campaigns I've been involved with has actually been a real asset for the groups coming in and the players to already have a real good foundation and know what we're trying to achieve right off day one.
At the under-17 selection camp for Asia Cup, both the men and women, I remember having a discussion with both coaches. So I was Justin with the men and Shannon Seabone with the women. After day one, say, hey, it feels like we're already through day two. because we're moving quicker, you know, and that's what's helped. It's not about, okay, Justin, here's the team, you must run this.
Yeah.
But again, I use that term core competencies. You know, you can have a good faith belief that the players that come into that level have been exposed to these concepts. Now, and the great thing about coaching, there's 10,000 correct ways to do it. You know, put your flavour on it, blend in your coaching philosophy, your coaching personality around this framework. Now we've got a chance to have sustained international success. That's the goal.
Yep. You know? Absolutely. So I know we've spoken about a lot that if you can't shoot, you probably can't play anymore. What are some of the other basic skill acquisitions that players need to have to even have give themselves a chance?
I think now with the heavy emphasis on dribble penetration, and creating scoring opportunities for yourself or for others out of dribble penetration, a couple of things there. Advanced ball handling skills. And, you know, most players can dribble their right and left hand. You know, my six-year-old can dribble a little bit with their, but can they do it under high-level international duress defensively? And linked to that is maintain your drive line. So when you drive against physical, FIBA-officiated defence, can you maintain a drive line in a stance and make a play, whether that's at the rim or whether that's make a pass at the end of it? They're the big things that I see. So that links back. If I'm coaching under 12s, can they dribble right and left handed? Can they start without travelling? And can they stop without travelling?
Yeah.
You know, because that links even with the boomers. You know, can they go up against strong international bodies, come to a jump stop, be on balance, find a target without travelling? I think they're the two big things offensively. Yeah. And defensively, you know, it doesn't change. If you can't keep your man in front of you, you know, I know you both guys are shooting aficionados.
Yeah, lateral movement's not big.
If you can't keep your man in front of you, that's when you can't play.
Yep.
You know, no, that's absolutely. A big one.
But the other thing I'd add to that is just the IQ of the game in one-on-one. Internationally now, you need to be able to make the play, and that's what Lonnie's talking about, keeping your line, and you're either making the play for yourself or you're creating for someone else, but also seeing too and giving the ball up. One of the traits of Australian basketball is definitely ball movement. You know, we're not an ISO nation. Like, being able to make good decisions when that ball comes out and you're seeing people run at you, that to me is the other thing that really stands out between the good to the great, is those that can really do that on a consistent level and make good decisions. And the reality is, without the elite ball handling skills, you can't do that. So that's definitely the starting point on it.
So how do coaches put that into their training session? So we're going to assume that we've got an under 14 club team. We use Kilsyth. We've already rolled out Griffith and Diamond Valley, so it's only fair we throw out Kilsyth. And Mike's not here to push the Werribee campaign, so we'll go with Kilsyth. Under 14 Kilsyth coach, how does he start implementing all of this into his training sessions, or her training sessions, to progress them so they can have a chance to make a state team, and then from that point an Australian team?
I think game sense coaching, and what I mean by that is practicing skills and setting up drills that strongly replicate what they're going to face in a game. It doesn't mean that it's just, okay, let's go play 5-on-5 the whole time, but with ball handling, you know, I think we've been a great nation at using the Maravich drills and Gannon Baker stuff and all that. But when, you know, the challenge internationally is, can I dribble under duress, hold my drive line, whatever else? So when we're teaching ball handling and things like that, add a game sense element, add some defense, add some challenges. And one of the big ones that we've been pushing through all our coach education, as you know, Rob, is decision making. So you've got a skill that you want to concentrate on. So you create a drill. Right? I'm saying now add decision making. So 3-on-2, numerical advantage, disadvantage, because that's the game. You know, the term split kick extras is part of our style of play vernacular. And what it means is the game is a series of 2-on-1s. It's a series of 3-on-2s. So if that's the case, why aren't we practicing that? Why are we practicing so often 1-on-0, 2-on-0, 3-on-0?
Yeah, in small-sided games, like living in the 2-on-2, 3-on-3, number of advantage drills, I think is the quickest way, because no one can hide. You're either able to create a split or you're not. And that's the way that you can definitely evolve that over time.
Yep. I think probably the only drill we ever really do one on is probably form shooting.
Yep.
And that would probably be about it from here on. Because even if you're just doing shooting drills, add an element of defense in, add a closeout person in, have them close out, box out, slide for two after that. Just find a way to work both sides of the ball at the same time. And that is probably one of the harder parts is how can I get maximum value out of this drill? And we often have it. We have 10 kids in a team, we'll get 7 at training. And that's a massive problem. So straight away, it's like we can't do what we would normally do. Let's make it those small-sided games, as you say, Justin, and let's go 4-on-3. Let's go 3-on-2 and have subs in. I think that's a great way of getting it through.
Yeah, from some people that are obviously listening and, you know, hit you up around stadiums and whatnot, and I've only got an hour a week, you know, what should I focus on more? That's the definite answer. We'll figure out a way to teach both at the same time. You know, and don't have to block it down into just one part of the game. Two-way teach it and maximise that time.
And, you know, I always say in clinics, you want to get more drill out of the drill and more practice out of practice. And the key to that is add elements. And, yeah. And we talk a lot about drill series. So everyone's got their little suite of drills. What element can you add? Can you add a decision-making element, okay? Can you add a competitive element? Can you add numerical advantage, disadvantage? Now, that one drill now becomes 5. And practice is more fun for you because it's more dynamic. It's certainly, and the most important people,
yeah.
It's more fun for the players.
And that may be just starting small. Like, as I keep saying, I'm coaching under 12s. I'm just pretty happy when they catch it and don't bounce it off their foot on the first one. That's we're working with really small steps at this point.
Are at that point yet, mate, after 6 weeks?
It's only been 6 weeks, and I am losing more hair, and it is going greyer week by week, I must admit. We're getting there slowly. They've stopped wearing the cones as hats. So we have moved on, thankfully. But this is half the battle, is trying to work out what is appropriate for your age group. And we do a lot of two-on-one stuff in under-12s, purely because that's what we see the most of. And that is the easiest way for us to start teaching, okay, advantage. When do I have to pass it? When am I responsible for scoring this myself? And realistically, defensively, all we ever see is two-on-one, because under-12s is fast-break basketball. It is just up and down, up and down, up and down. And I'm eternally grateful that I get to stand on the sidelines and not have to do that track meet that they go through as well. But there are different levels depending on your age group as well. So 14, 16s and 18s, now it starts to become, well, okay, 2-on-1 in under 18s, you're probably not seeing a whole lot of anymore, but you will see a lot of 3-on-2, 4-on-3 at that age. Your push points become more vital, I think, as you move up the age groups as well, because 2-on-1 tends to be within the lane lines a lot, but now you start talking about, well, okay, we might allow the first pass, we're not allowing it over the elbow, we have to send that further away as well. So I think you do need to have your core skills and drills that you need to be working on, but also tailor it for your age group as well. I think it's a really important part of it. That's just about it from me. You guys got anything that I've missed?
No.
Which tends to happen.
Covered it, mate.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, given we do have one here, we will throw the shop lock portion on. Thanks also to the person that wrote in that said this shop lock does not go for 24 seconds. I am acutely aware that this does not go for 24 seconds. We are working off the college clock, which is 30.
But you need to find time to do something else if you've timed it.
Exactly right. That is. But we appreciate the feedback as always. So, what was the first team you ever coached?
Griffith under 16 boys.
Yeah. What's your favourite NBA team?
Like most coaches, San Antonio.
Yep. Makes sense. Favourite NBL team?
I've got a soft spot for Illawarra, being a New South Wales country guy, and probably Cairns because I spent some time up there. So those two.
Yeah, excellent. Favourite WNBL team?
I guess I should say the Canberra Capitals now. I'm a Canberrian.
Yep, very nice. What's your most used coaching phrase?
Get back.
I like that. Any coaching superstitions?
I don't like to coach with anything in my pockets. Keys, wallets, phones, whatever drives me crazy.
Yep, not bad. Who's a coach you always steal from?
Rod Pop.
Yep. Favourite coaching website?
That's a good one. I think the WABC one now is a bit of a one-stop shop. I go there probably more than anywhere.
Yep, as well as the BA coaching
resource. Of course, that goes without saying.
It's the only reason we ask the next question is because we really hope that people come in and say, hey, my favourite coaching podcast is Talking Split with Justin Schuller. That's what we hope for, but obviously you've answered that already. It hasn't happened yet, unfortunately. And obviously your favourite state in Australia is Victoria with the dual citizen passport.
This is right.
Exactly. Thanks everyone for joining us for this season. This is our final episode of the season. We brought the big guns in Lono for coming in for this one. We are back next year. It'll be roughly around February we come back to this as well. So to everyone that's reached out via Twitter, Facebook, any form of social media, email, we do appreciate it, especially the people that have left reviews and ratings on iTunes as well. We do check all this all the time. We've had a number of emails over the last couple of weeks from coaches saying, hey, can you just clarify what you're talking about when you say something? So we do try and get back to everyone as best we can, but we do really appreciate the interaction that comes in. If it wasn't for you guys, we wouldn't do this. In all honesty, if there was only myself, my dog, and my laptop that downloads this, we're not going to bother with this. But we do really appreciate all the listens and everything that goes with it. We do average around about 800 to 1,000 downloads every week, which is outstanding from our end. So for us to be able to push that message out is fantastic. Please do enjoy the break and the holidays. Do get some downtime. You know, I think you're allowed Christmas Day before you're back in, and Boxing Day is a big day on every basketball person's calendar. Mm-hmm. Yep. Justin's playing that night, I think, as well.
Yeah, you guys come along. You put me on the spot. Yeah. Can't remember, but Illawarra, it's an open-air game. It might be Illawarra, actually, so definitely get along.
Absolutely. Good luck with your coaching, everyone, and we'll talk to you guys next year.